show is on in less
live.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like me right now.
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is all we can say.
Get caught up. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth and names.
Everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have all of you along with us. I am thrilled to be here, and I hope, well, I hope we've got just millions of people out there listening today. We, studio, and I hope you'll bear with us on it. New settings and a little bit different arrangement than we've normally had. So if we have a little goof up here or there today, why, please bear with us on it. And let us know on the chat room, those of you joining us on the chat room. And by the way, if you're listening to some other venue other than Head On Radio Network, be sure and head on over to the chat room. Head On Radio Network, chatroom.com. Be glad to have you in there. Come on in and join the group today. Little light today on the crowd. Anyway, welcome to the show. We've got a lot to talk about today. We hope you'll join us. And you can do that, you know, by giving us a call at 866-5254. 866-546-5254 today. Of course, it's a free call. And if you've got minutes to bring on your phone plan, well, you can call us at 866-941-876-6896. Going to keep the old cough button handy to the ticklish throat. Hope it's not something going around. All of you probably have been keeping abreast of a whole lot of election was over with. We might have, kind of time. Let's face it, it's not a quiet time. Not quiet at all. What with getting all of his appointments made and all of that. Very, very busy. And we'll talk about some of his appointment. Still don't know about Hillary Clinton. About just a little while ago. I'm my old age. I really am. But been watching the bailout a little bit on TV, the hearings on the bailout, and that was interesting. I don't know how many of you keeping up to speed on that, but it's something we all need to keep a close eye on, I believe. Oh, it was Tom Daschle. This is going to be the Secretary for Health and Human Services. So a good appointment there. Daschle, good guy. I always liked Tom Daschle, and I've been watching those. But I thought that Representative Brad Sherman, I think it was it Ackerman or Sherman? I think it's it's Ackerman. All right. Representative Ackerman kind of chastising the guys for showing up with their private jets with their tin cups out. And let's see if we can have a little bit of that on here.
High hat and tuxedo.
Come on, let's have the whole thing here, bud, not just part of it.
There's a delicious irony in seeing three jets flying in to Washington, D.C., coming off of them with tin cups in their hand, saying that they're going to be running their businesses. It's like seeing a guy show up at the soup kitchen in high hat and tuxedo.
Good line. really a good line. Of course, that's not going to faze these guys, the big three. You can insult them all you want to, and they'll sit there and take it. Number one, they have to. Secondly, they're going to go back and drive the Jets tonight back to Detroit or wherever it is they live in grand style. And I don't want to blame the whole thing on them. I'm not sure where all the blame doesn't lie any place with this big three problem we have right now. And to be sure, it is a problem because MIPS are at stake. Millions of jobs. And just to cut through some of the crap that's being spread around by various news outlets, in my opinion, it's not just the fault of General Motors or just the fault of United Auto Workers that Toyota and Honda and Subaru are allowed to pay their employees roughly half of what GM and pay in benefits. Why shouldn't we be asking, well, let me put it another way. Why should we be asking GM's employees to give up more? And they have given up a lot already. And if you've got to put blame on someplace for the need for this bailout, blame every single employee of Toyota and has refused to sign a union membership card. That's where a lot of this is due. Blame the management of Toyota and Honda and Subaru for hiring that they keep on the payroll oftentimes an hour with no benefits. They do that all the time. Blame the politicians that have consistently made it more difficult for workers. Don't blame people that have already sacrificed health to have their wages and their benefits package for the sake of the company. And a lot of the big three workers have done that. A lot of them have sacrificed a lot and lost their jobs anyway. But it was embarrassing today, I would think, to the big three. They flew into the nation's capital in their private luxurious jets to make their case to the House that the auto industry's running out of cash and they need $25 billion in our money to avoid bankruptcy. The CEOs of Ford and General Motors and Chrysler may have told Congress that they'll likely go out of business without a bailout, yet that hasn't stopped them from traveling in style. General Motors, what's his name, Wagoner? He flew in General Motors' $36 million luxury to tell everybody that they're desperate for cash. A round-trip ticket, even first class, for $875 from Detroit, and fly that corporate jet in there. Now, I know. The General Motors CEO flying in, dare I say it, with oil. Doesn't that just make you sick that just thinking CEO of General Motors might have to fly on a regular airplane? Normal people? I know some of that air that people back in coach breathe actually makes it up to first class, so he would have to breathe that. Therefore, it probably is prudent for him to fly in a company jet and spend $20,000 to go back and forth rather than less than a grand on first class. Couldn't be seen doing that, of course. I used to work for a company many years ago when I was a young man. That reminds me of something. And if you talk about excess, I used to work for a company, and I worked for them for some 10 years when I was a very, very young man, that when the president of the company came to visit, he and the vice president would come. They would come on two separate jets. That's right. They didn't want to let the president and vice president outdo them, so they flew in on two separate jets. This is corporate guys, president and vice president of the company, so that, you know, just in case one plane went down, they wouldn't lose the whole leadership of the company. That's, I don't know. What is bailout for the auto workers? I'm torn on it. I really am. I was Wall Street. We hear people now saying, oh, it's working. I've yet to see one iota of proof that it's worked whatsoever. I have seen any evidence that it's working. Please let me know. I'd like to know what form this success is coming. I've heard several Republicans saying that it worked for this bailout to get done. Say, yes, it's working. Well, I don't think it is. A lot of people that don't think it is, and I've yet to see one single sign that it is. I don't know. I don't know if it is or not, but like I said, I haven't seen any evidence that it is. But what do you think about it? Should we do it? Should we help save the auto industry? I'm not so sure. And I'm not so sure we shouldn't. So I understand the plight of the people that are involved in Washington trying to decide what to do. And you know what? Knowing Congress the way I do and the way I know you do, they'll probably take it less serious than you and I do. Because after all, it's you and I that have to worry about going to the grocery store and being able to afford groceries. It's you and I that have to worry about our jobs and the jobs of our kids and grandkids and all that. It's you and I that have to worry about that stuff. The legislators don't have to worry about that. So they'll take a vote on it, just like they did the flout. And whether you're for it or against it, I thought the first bailout was crazy. And so far, it's proving out to me that it was crazy. Here we've spent almost half of that $740 billion. And almost accountability for that money just isn't there. We hear Hank Paulson talking now like, well, we'll save the other half of it for Obama to spend. But evidence that that money is going to help the credit industry around the country, the banks that are getting the money are hanging on to stockholders. They're using the money for acquisitions of other banks. So I don't see all so far. Just don't see any evidence of it. 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I think they should, but they should have strings attached to it. On both industries, too. Banking and there should be conditions involved.
They certainly should put some that they didn't put the first time around with the Wall Street bailout. They didn't have hard.
That wasn't a bailout. That was just what we call in New York a ripple.
Yeah, it appears that it was.
Going out of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want simple transfer of funds out of the country.
I'm afraid you are.
This is something that has to remain in. You know, this Wall Street, in my opinion, the payoff to bring Barack Obama in power.
Well, who knows?
I've seen this movie before too many times.
Well, we certainly haven't seen any accountability for that money so far. I'm not pleased about it.
And you're not, trust me.
No, you're right, we're not. I told you to go down there and protest on Wall Street and put a stop to this. And I did, I told you, and you didn't get a stop.
Well, you know, NYPD has a lot of AK-47s, and they're on to the teeth.
Well, I was counting on you, man. I really was.
Because the stuff I would have to say were probably, you know.
Well, you couldn't have done any worse than that one guy that was standing down there protesting on Wall Street with that said the sign that said, jump, you effers, like that sign.
Yeah, but I'm just surprised. And history repeats itself, you know. This would be paid for the old oligarchy to bring those back.
Well, I hope it's nothing like that soon. We're going to find out just how beholden is to these fellows down there now.
Okay.
I certainly hope. I made the statement that Obama was.
Well, no, because he's probably going to have free reign.
Yeah.
Seems like the first 100 days, he's going to go through a lot of massive legislation. You know, I do have problems with the Chief Justice.
Oh, you mean for the Attorney General's office?
Yeah, the Attorney General, I'm sorry. You know, I do have a problem in this connection with Chiquita Banana Company.
Yes.
But I kind of look at it as what Roosevelt did with Joseph P. Kennedy. You got to put the fox in the hen house sort of thing.
Well, and the other thing is, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm just throwing it out there to be devil's advocate. What do you do if you find anybody with enough moxie, intelligence, and experience and all that to take care of that situation, to run that office properly? What, you know, how do you find somebody whose hands are completely clean?
You don't, because anybody who's anybody in Washington has sold their soul years ago. You know, they've been presented up, they've been to the mountaintop, and the devil has said, well, you know, you can have what is surveyed here.
And
Barack himself.
And we all, is it wise to go outside of Washington? You know, is not wise to the ways of Washington? Find a newbie to go in there? Would he be able to handle it?
Not really.
Yeah. So we boxes to guard the chicken house always. and one of the head foxes.
No, but one of them. So, yes, I don't like the business, his association. I think he's very competent. I think at the end of the day, he's going to tie up a lot of loopholes.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, you're good with your history because Joe Kennedy was a necessary evil. And maybe I shouldn't call him evil, but he was a rascal, to be sure. And it was good to have one of the foxes in there. Sometimes you can't be a good detective unless you've been one of the thieves.
Well, you know what Barack Obama is doing. He's going to be a good cop to a whole army of bad cops, and you know it's a good policy.
Yeah.
Because what's his name? Not a nice guy either. The chief of staff.
Right. Oh, Rahm Emanuel. The guy's a shark. He is a shark.
Yeah, but hey, you know what? He's a shark.
That's right. That's right. Well, what do you think about the indicted thing down in Texas? Anything to it at all?
I don't know. I think Dick Cheney is going to go alongside a lot of our tin pot dictators this week. But I wonder if it got broke.
Indictment will probably end up right alongside of Tom DeLay's someplace. Yeah, that's turned out.
Nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
but I think you need to put some taxes out there and tax them at death. So, like, this is what we need to do. Tax the rich. That way when those rich, they have to live like paupers. No world paupers. For you and me, it's living relatively well off.
Well, are you living relatively well off?
Compared to other people, I think so.
Oh, good.
You know, compared to a lot of people around me, you know, I'm lucky enough to have, you know, family and a strong social safety net.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means everything.
Let's say two or three different countries. A lot of people aren't blessed the way I've been, and one of the things I've learned over the past few years is I've counted my blessings of having a strong family, but also that strong family would not have, it's like one hand washes, not have existed without them paying their fair share and refurbishing those coffers out to the greater good.
Are you on a different?
No.
Oh, okay.
Am I good now?
The button is very, very poor today. I mean,
okay, hold on for one second. Let me show you to another slide, though. Hold on.
Okay. This is a live show.
How's that?
Let's see.
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Can you hear me now?
You had commercial on TV. Can you hear me now?
Okay. And like I said, my, as you know, my family's from Jamaica. Well, in Jamaica. And, you know, thank God I still feel very tied to the island that we pay our fair share of taxes down. Yes.
I took a cruise one time. Maybe I've told you this.
Mm-hmm.
Took a cruise one time, and of all places that they let us off to tour some of the island, they took us, this was a Carnival cruise, they took us to Ocho Rio.
Ocho Rio, yeah.
Yeah, have you been there?
Oh, yeah, a lot of my relatives live not too far from there.
Well, the dock and all, where they let us off, it wasn't the coolest place that I've ever seen.
that's one of the worst places you can go, actually, and I don't know why they send you there. You know, there's forces. You see, the thing is, a lot of these islands, you have to know people.
Yeah.
To really see the magnificence, and unfortunately, Jamaica's one of them. If you don't have an insider scoop, you know. Forget.
Well, next time, I would have learned a lesson that day. Yeah, it wasn't the neatest place I've ever been.
Not too far from there. You'll find some of the best, whatever.
Mm. Well, I just thought I'd ask. A lot of people never heard of Ocho Rio. I would rather have seen some other places.
Well, that's a tourist trip. You know, yeah. See a tourist go. Spend their money and leave.
Well,
that's what they count.
You get on a Carnival cruise, and there's two places that if you go, stay on the ship when they. when they say it's time to get up, if you go to Ocho Rio, stay on the boat, and if you go to Mexico, stay on the boat.
Well, Carnival Cruise as a line is, I don't like Carnival.
Well, they're a big bang for the buck, I guess, is the thing with Carnival.
Norwegian.
Yeah, Norwegian costs a little more. I hear their food's better and all that. Although, you know what I do when I go on a cruise? I like to just sit on the stern in a nice deck chair with someone you love or a friend. Just sit there and have a cup of coffee or an iced tea and just enjoy the weather. I love cruising. My oh my, that is. I'd love to go on a cruise every other week if I could afford it.
Yeah.
And I live in there too. Here in South Florida, you can cruise cheap. Didn't cost you. Thanks for calling today. I really appreciate hearing from you.
I'm here as always.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, not one of the best places I've ever been. Hey, do you know what this week is? I've got us. If Bob's listening, I know he will. You see, those of you that aren't big college football fans, there's this guy named Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Is a big West Virginia Mountaineer fan, and he was last year, as I understand it, born and bred, left West Virginia and took over the coaching job in Michigan. Indians are very unhappy with this guy, you see. This week is Michigan week for Ohio State. SU fans and even those people from Michigan, they think this is a big deal every year. We think it's a big deal. We think it's the best rivalry in the country, and so... just going to have a little tribute to that, and we'll be right back after this. And this is for the OSU Michigan week. If we get the right thing going here. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Good to have you along with us, as always. Hey, let's head on over to the phone. We got a couple of people waiting here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Jennifer in beautiful Washington State.
Hey, Washington, the beautiful dark blue state.
Actually, the sun is shining today, and we have a little break from the rain, so it's very, very pretty.
Well, that, you know, we expect to have a little rain in Washington, but you pulled that state through for us. Boy, they came through in fine style, Washington did, during the election. Wow.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, Eastern Washington is kind of funny, but Western Washington is true blue.
Yeah, well, Eastern Washington's a, you're right, it's the more rural part of Washington, and who knows.
Well, I'm proud to say I'm in Western Washington. I voted all Democrat like I always do.
Well, a yellow dog like myself. Yes, yes, yes. Well, yeah, what can we do for you today?
Well, I wanted to talk about the Big Three bailout.
Yes, please do. What do you feel? What do you think about it?
If you do, part of me says yes and part of me says no. The part of me that says yes is the part to be sure that people in that part of the country have jobs. He that says no is, well, I'm a little angry with the understating it. I'm very miffed because I know that the technology is there to build automobiles that are biofuels and cars that can get 60 miles to the gallon. And I know that the auto industry had a great deal to do with destroying any hope of rapid transit throughout the country. And that they had a great deal to do with destroying the market for hemp. I say this. Well, see, one of our biggest problems in this country is urban sprawl.
Oh, yeah.
We have to have cars. And, of course, that means we have to have gasoline at this point in time. So why don't the oil bail out the auto industry?
Well, now, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, they're making record profits.
A partnership, shouldn't it?
Yes. I mean, they're very dependent on one another. They've got all this money sitting around the auto industry and create jobs for people. And then they are busy making cars for us to sell in Europe, which is over 50% of their market, I understand.
And the American automakers, they're making money out of, they're making money in China. Of course, if the American in the tank, I guess the oil companies can depend on the foreign automakers to take up the space and bend, make enough cars to use all the gas that they can pump. I don't know. It's an ugly mess. I know you're not as old as I am, but can you?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm older than you are.
Well, we don't
want to. I'm getting close to 70.
We don't want to get in that kind of a contest. But
I'm older than God.
When you were a teenager or 16, 17, I don't know, in Washington, when you get your driver's license, and when you're 16.
Mm-hmm.
And you can drive, and my dad used to drive us up to Detroit and whenever the Cleveland Indians played up there, and there was a big billboard out, you know, better cars are being built, and Buick is building them, and it's all heard the saying, as General Motors goes, so goes America. To ever have envisioned a company like General Motors on the brink of bankruptcy?
Absolutely not.
No.
It's absolutely mind-boggling, but they did it to themselves.
They did.
I really don't have a lot of pity for them. I just pity the workers that are losing their jobs. And these people that are flying around to the tune of 20 grand a trip need their heads slapped in. I mean, come on. How many workers did they lay off for that trip?
Oh, sure.
You know?
Sure.
Give me a break.
Yeah, it's... It's looking like there probably will not be an automobile company bailout. If it does not come, are these guys, are they jerking us around, or are they really going to run out of cash? Are they really going to go bankrupt? A lot of people say that's playing chicken here. And we're on the precipice of losing millions of jobs, perhaps. Ugh, I don't know. It's an ugly situation. I don't know where.
People don't have the money to buy new cars now. And whatever they are manufacturing is not selling. And, I mean, they're practice cars. They should have stopped making SUVs ago. They should have stopped making these monster trucks. You focus on giving us our nice little mile-per-gallon cars that were sent to, it just makes me crazy. And as far as this other bailout goes, I've got news for you. I'm in a situation right now where I'm having trouble paying my mortgage. And so I was looking for some help with that because I heard there's money available now. And so I thought, well, I will just check around. And somebody told me, go to HUD.com. Don't go to HUD.com. What happened when I went to HUD.com, I filled out the stupid thing, which doesn't ask for any personal information, but they take your name and phone number and all that stuff. And within minutes after having filled that out online, I got a phone call from this fast-talking guy from Florida. He talks with a New York accent. You get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Who is telling, oh, they're going to get me a new loan, and I can start from scratch again, and I won't have 3 months, and it just sounded great. And they'll lower my... All I have to do is send them a balance.
Is that all?
That's all I have to do. Take care of everything.
Oh, man.
And my was flooded with stuff like this. Flooded. And it's not bad enough they do that. And they say time is very important. And they start trying to rush you into it.
Oh, well,
the money's
man.
Out there. But that's where it's going. Going to these damn four flushers that are preying on idiots like me.
Well, you're not much of an idiot if you didn't go through, go ahead and do it. Think of how many fish they will catch today by doing that.
Well, 10 a day is 10 grand.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's sad. That really is. But of course, if there's a pile of money sitting someplace, there's going to be the, like you said, that's a term I haven't heard in many years. My father liked it, four flusher. they're gonna come out of the weeds, and they're gonna find a way to feast off of someone else's troubles. It always happens.
Exactly.
Right.
So that is where our tax dollars are going. Once again, we find ourselves in a situation where the poor are being exploited by these fast-talking wealthy people.
Yeah. Well.
No, but it just is very disappointing. I thought that maybe, just maybe, this daylight, they all needed the help.
Sure. Well, so far, I haven't seen any evidence, and I've seen several politicians say, well, this bailout's working. We see it up. I haven't seen anything that suggests that.
I fail, and my real estate agent tells me that people are out now to look at homes because money is available. But I didn't think. I know he's showing homes.
Well,
I don't see that this is doing any good. I mean, one of my neighbors was foreclosed not too long ago. And I don't live in a fancy neighborhood, and I certainly don't live in a slum. I live in a probably lower middle class neighborhood, very nice neighborhood. It's always been real stable. And our governor has been very good at insulating us from a lot of things that have been really bad, like Michigan and Ohio, We don't have that situation here at this point. So, it's starting here now, too. And I'm one of the victims, and I'm not real happy about it, but...
Well, it's spreading. There isn't any question about that. And I don't know about they all over the country, but I do know that in many, many, and I have done my share of research on this, in many places right now, 700s, you better have the capacity to pay back that money and then some, and you better have at least 20% down. And that's a tough order for a lot of people to come up with.
No kidding, with homes selling in the $200,000.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
That's right.
How many people have 20 grand sitting around?
It's you better have that good credit, and what do they call it, the three C's? You better have the capacity to pay for it, and you better have plenty of money to put down, collateral. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult here. We in Lee County, Florida, we were second in the country last week. We had in this county, which is, you know, this is no New York City. This is no Seattle, this is no Phoenix. 1,655 foreclosures last month.
Florida got hit really hard along with California.
And what's difficult, we've been talking about this, a lot of folks are to find a bargain. They find a bargain, and by the time the deal gets done, decide whether or not to go ahead with a short sale or not, 60, 90 days and such. The value of the house has fallen, and the people who originally were going to buy it change their mind. If it's fallen this much in 60 or 90 days, I'm going to wait. And so they back the market. And we've got people sitting on the sidelines that would buy. They're close to the bottom of the market, but I don't know that we are. But I hate to say
I
that.
Wonder if that's what happened with my house, because I had a buyer, an offer, and I closed, and they backed out.
Could well be. It could well be. I've heard several real estate folks say that is exactly what happens. The banks have been lending institutions dragging their feet, and in, you know, property values are falling, and people see that the property values, you know, and you're going to need a couple of appraisals, and that further complicates it. You could get by with one not so long ago. They're making it tough. They're making it very, very tough. There's no question about that.
Yep. Well, I don't honestly think that the powers that be really want us in better shape. I think it's like Tom Hartman says, the middle class has got to go. Even after this election, we're trying to get rid of the middle class.
Oh,
and when the middle class goes, those of us who are below middle class get the brunt of it really, really hard.
Always.
So, you know, I think, I'll tell you the truth, I'm very, very leery. I'm not expecting the changes that we had hoped for and that we voted for.
I sure hope you're wrong on that.
I hope I am, too.
An honest, sincere effort. I do understand maybe a year or so ago before the economy got quite so bad might be difficult, but the basic principles of what he ran on, I hope he makes it on, and I'm hopeful, and I'm confident that he will.
He is a dishonest man.
No.
But I'm not sure how much of it is really up to him.
That's right, and it's one thing we all have to remember about possibly having unreal expectations of things. It's going to take a long time. I saw a survey last night on CNBC. Which said that I believe it was 44% of the people in this poll expected the recession to last from 3 to 5 years. And I thought, wow, the American public is feeling that bad about this economy. 3 to 5 years, that was 44%. And the other ones were...
And there are economists saying that it will get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that has to happen. I mean, lost on a regular basis. 53,000 Citibank alone.
Gosh, you know, when I heard that, I thought, 3,000 people at. Really?
Well, that's worldwide.
Yeah, they are.
And I think they're laying off worldwide just here.
In Britain, they're laying off.
But, you know, the way the economies are set up now, we're so interwoven. Happening everywhere affects everywhere else, and we're just screwed.
I know. Well, we'll come out of this sooner or later, and
I will do.
And call us again soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye.
It is easy to get all caught up, isn't it? You look at the doom and gloom all day long, every day on the markets and so forth. I see the markets down nearly 400 points as we speak. A lot of people losing more money on their 401ks and all that. Difficult time. Very difficult time. Well, we're going to pause for another break here just for a second, and we'll be right back. Song puts me in a good mood, and I am. Somebody asked me earlier today why I was in such a good mood, not a bad day, and I said, well, you know, when you get in the head with a baseball bat 10 times yesterday, and today only, oh, that's how I feel today. How you, huh? Are you facing anything like our last caller? Are you safe with your job? Is everything hunky-dory with you? Do you have any financial problems, or are you in a lot of debt? I know a lot of people that are having a tough time of it right now, a very, very tough time. And I don't know. I don't know why I seem to know so many. It seems as though the community here where we live, which has been a very, I don't want to say wealthy community, although part of it is extremely, extreme wealth to the unimaginable extreme. in Fort Myers and Sanibel and Captiva Island and Naples, Florida, as you might expect, all in this area. Many billionaires, homes in the $30, $40 million range and all that. So there's untold wealth. But there's also the majority of people are just average people. And they're suffering. And these 2,035 foreclosures last month didn't come from those wealthy folks. They came, and it's troublesome to see it. And there are a lot of people around the country that don't completely understand the problem because they live, just like our last caller, where they live hasn't been infected with this yet or troubled with it yet, call it what you will. It is a disease that's spreading throughout the country, and that's what I'm afraid auto industry, if something isn't done. And Chuck, another million jobs or so, we facing a catastrophic economic condition here in this country already. A lot of people now, we don't have soup kitchens. We don't have in the corners yet. The difference between what happened in 1929, starting in 1929, and what it is now, back then people just lost everything they had. They just lost everything they had. Today, the market being what it is and all, so many people are losing the pensions that they've worked for all their lives. They may not be losing their car or their house or their material possessions, but they're losing their retirement, what they've worked for all these years, what they bargained for in good faith with the companies that they work for, and that money's been invested, and the people are losing their retirement. Many, many people of retirement age are having to keep working. And yes, I know we're living older and living a bit healthier now than in years gone by. We can work a little longer now than when we used to. But there comes a time when there can only be so many people carrying out groceries at the grocery stores or finding the carts in the parking lot at Walmart. It's just, I know I keep using the word ugly. It's very, very ugly. And, It troubles me greatly. The market is down 400 points at the moment. Another good day on Wall Street. That takes it down to, well, not it won't at that point. Of course, we still got 3.5 minutes to go, and who knows when the market days what can happen in 3.5 minutes. We got a lot to talk about all historical on you in the second half today, and holy Joe Lieberman that I want to be sure and mention. A couple of historical things in the second half of the program today, so I hope you'll stick with us on that. What do you think about Joe Lieberman right now? So someone planted a seed in my mind after they heard what I was saying yesterday about Joe, and I'm still not happy about the Democrats allowing him to keep his chairmanship of the Homeland Security, but on further review, and it's another way to look at it, doesn't Obama have Lieberman cornered now? Would Lieberman dare vote against any of Obama's appointments that Obama puts up? Would he dare go on Fox News and ruffle any Democratic feathers without looking like a complete ass? Which he is anyway. Can he go against anything that Obama wants without looking? Obama will count on Joe to go over to the Republican side for a couple of votes when they're really needed. Maybe to break a filibuster or whatever. Who's Joe Lieberman now? Brock is made. And maybe, just maybe he's smarter than a great poker player, and he might have played his hand just right on this. I've always thought he's pretty damn odd. That's going to be interesting to see if he owns Holy Joe now. What do you think? Let's call after the break, 866-546-5254 after the break. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm Lieberman. Maybe it was the smart thing to do. Maybe hanging on a string now, and Lieberman's going to be a good little boy and do whatever he's told. That would be good. That would be good. Only Barack knows that, and only Lieberman knows that. I wonder if there's been contact back and forth. It just sounded to me like Lieberman was a bit contrite. I don't know. I don't trust the guy. I never will trust the guy. I don't like him. I've never liked him. I never will like him. But maybe, just maybe, Barack Obama has played his hand well here. We're going to find out. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news. Don't go away.
Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Without question, in our mind, it is dire, it is critical, it is a crisis.
UAW President Ron Gettelfinger. Gettelfinger says at GM alone, 47,000 UAW members have lost their jobs since 2005. He says a $25 billion federal bridge loan is needed to keep U.S. auto companies and the 13 million jobs that depend upon them in business. UAW, Gettelfinger says, has done its part by making huge concessions, saving the auto companies billions of dollars. Just 10% of the cost of a new vehicle goes to pay for UAW labor, and Gettelfinger says union workers earn every penny.
The men and women of the UAW are proud to go to work and receive a fair day's wage in exchange for a fair...
GM CEO Rick Wagoner says neither mismanagement nor threatened GM's survival. He says what exposes GM to failure now is that he says that $25 billion federal bridge loan is needed for that crisis. New York's governor is taxing tuition to help close that state's Jesse Russell reports.
One solution Governor David Paterson for fixing New York's budget shortfall is raising tuition for SUNY and CUNY students reinvested in higher education, but instead will be used to generate spending. The Fiscal Policy Institute's James Parrott says the tuition increase is a sense...
Tuition, as you normally think of it, where it goes to the university, it's not being used for that. It's being used in lieu of progressive income tax increases.
Put the option of progressive tax increases back on the table. According to Priest's, were successfully used in 2003 to tackle the last major budget shortfall. Parent sector unions that contracts should be reopened, Paterson needs to show a commitment to a multifaceted approach.
I can't imagine that public sector unions are going to lend themselves to a partial solution when the governor has arbitrarily taken, you know, a major solution that's proven to have been successful in recent years, and he says he's not going to do that.
Here's today's economic report. With prices dropping like a rock, sales of new homes in Southern California rose like a rocket. Home sales were up 67% over a year ago, as prices were down by 32.6%. That's a 2.8% drop since September of this year. Six counties make up Southern California, and 21,532 homes were sold in that region during October. That's the highest number of homes moved all year.
Workers Independent News put in the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice in the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News at laborradio.org.
In less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly! You hear me? In my dreams!
You're going to like me.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, that's it.
So this is good. We got problems.
Any questions?
You've got them. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have been through.
This is Eve Show. Guy James Show, America's one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right, now the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head Arc. Thanks for joining us here this afternoon. We're going to devote most like an hour today to a few historical things, and we'll get to that in just talking a moment ago about the difference between now and 1920. I ran across an old quote. Back in 1929, they asked Al Capone. He wasn't investing in the stock market, and he said it's a racket. When a mafioso calls something a racket, it usually is. And sadly, that quote's just as true today, thanks to this bipartisan deregulation of the financial markets. And really, the effects of the current crash, however, are not going to be felt the same way, like I mentioned, as the 1929 crash. Instead of being asked to dish out non-existent cash to pay for stock bought on a margin, like they did back then, average Americans are watching their retirement plans shrinking into practically nothing, and it's leaving a lot of people in a very, very, very bad place, a very bad place indeed. We were talking yesterday about what happened to the Republican Party. How could they have sunk? And I ran across this little piece quoting Abraham Lincoln. 47 years, our fathers brought forth in this continent a new nation, conceived and located to the proposition that all men are created equal. Quoting Theodore Roosevelt, when all is said, remains as the indispensable prerequisite to success in the kind of national life for which we strive. Our aim is, pointed out, the fact that there are some respects in which men are not equal, but also to insist that there should be an equality, at least an approximate equality in the conditions under which one obtains the chance to show the stuff that is in him when compared to his. Moving on, quoting Warren Harding, we drew to a pair of deuces and filled, to quote the great. And to quote Ronald Reagan, facts are stupid things. And moving on in the Republican group here, George W. Bush, you're working hard to put food on your family. So I guess we can see an obvious erosion in intellect in the Republican Party. It just happened oh so slowly, but it finally has gotten to the point where they're going to have to come up with something different. That's all there is. What needs to be done right now with this administration is going to take the oath on the 20th of January, and by the way, we are going forward to it. Got some respects from all that I'm hearing now, but anyway, we are looking for logistics work out right. I'm hearing a lot of horror stories. They're going to have jumbotrons put up everywhere. I heard last night if all the people show up that they expect to show up, there'd be approximately 1 square foot for everybody to stand. Transportation's going to be nearly impossible. We'll see. We'll see what the people in Washington... I guess if the people in Washington don't know how to handle, nobody does. I'll tell you one thing. I realize it's just a little bit over 100,000 people on home football game Saturdays, but Ohio State and Michigan, another excuse. It just... You go to one of the Ohio State football games, and 105,000 people or so watching the game, there isn't any problem at all with traffic or congestion. Of course, you figure 30 to 40 times that many people in Washington, D.C., but there are a lot of people probably figure nobody knows how to handle a bigger crowd better than anybody in the people in Washington, D.C. We shall see. But administration needs to get done. They need to open up the books that have, they need to open up this vault of secrecy that's been cares of the Bush administration, and just about revelations about surveillance either. We need to see Cheney's energy group. Love to see those. We need some aggressive work with the 9/11. We need some transparency with this bailout. God, do we ever. We need some justice. The Bush administration is a criminal regime. And when you stop and look at it, what Paulson's doing is an insult to pretty much all the folks that got relentlessly investigated and pursued, and in many cases prosecuted and punished. And then there's this trickle-down. If we're not convinced that trickle-down is some sort of a cruel scam, you want to support the middle class? We need governments for peace and justice, not for rich gangsters. The sick, employ the poor. There's a lot that can be done. This bailout money was wasted. Absolutely wasted. And another thing I think we need to do, I think we need to do some demilitarization. I'm suggesting that we ought to separate the industrial complex from the military complex. Bring the military bucks back to the military and then reduce it by half. We don't need any more Blackwaters. We don't need any KBRs. Screw Raytheon and Halliburton and people like that. There's a lot that can be done. I hope that the establishment in Washington have two rock solid to hold on anything to keep some of this progress from being done. Dick Cheney. Been indicted along with Al Gonzalez, Cheney, for investing $85 million in a, a penitentiary company where there's been indicted. Will he at this indictment? Would he and Alberto Gonzalez ever have to stand trial for any? Love that. Wouldn't most of you local TV station down in Texas? Well, that doesn't sound like a local TV station down in Texas.
The 19 coverage on indictments out of Willacy County, one of them filed.
Channel 5 Stephanie Stone is live at the Willacy County Courthouse. Local names that she says that are on those indictments.
Rita Garcia spoke to an indicted judge's attorney.
And Becky Medellin found out how the people who live in Willacy County and just minutes before news time, News Channel 5 obtained copies of all of today's indictments.
For the very latest, we now go live to our Stephanie Stone at the Willacy County Courthouse. Stephanie, what charges is the vice president facing tonight?
The vice president is now accused of engaging in organized criminal activity. Now, the jury asked that all the people named in the indictments be summoned to court. So that means the vice president will not be arrested. We spoke with the vice president's press secretary earlier today. She tells News Channel 5 that she had never heard of an indictment, nor had she heard of Willacy County. The vice president had not been heard. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, State Senator Jr., Judge Migdalia Lopez, Judge Janet Leal, and Wilzano are some of the public officials named. Get News Channel 5, he was investigating corruption within the private prison's death. According to Cheney's indictment, the vice president is typically accused of investing some $85 million in the prep which houses federal inmates. The grand jury accuses Cheney and Alberto Gonzalez of engaging in organized criminal activity. The local district, here's what he has to say about the accusation.
You know, I thought about it, but I believe that the only, if I was to not follow the regular procedures, and right now I'm following the regular procedures as far as these, and as far as, you know, removal and anything like that, it would have to be after a conviction and or a civil case or removal.
So there you have the story coming from the great state of Texas. Speaking of Texas, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. How about that, Texas? But I guess I'll have to listen to that later. This is Mike, your friend down from Texas.
Hi, Mike.
First of all, congratulations on Obama's win. Y'all won, and we'll see. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. At least I will. And let's see what happens. You'd agree with that.
I do.
Your call, as I was listening to the podcast from yesterday, and you were talking a lot about the auto workers, I don't think it's the union's fault. However, they're on $35 billion in cash. So, and I was listening, I'm not going to take credit for the Batras. I was listening to Hartman's podcast, and he brought up the fact, why couldn't the union take some of that $35 billion that they're sitting on? Stock's a pretty good deal right now, at $2 or $3 a share. They could buy 50, 60% of the shares, and the union can control the company.
An interesting situation.
You know, and give the shareholders, let them have their shareholders meeting and appoint new boards, and they can run it the way they want to. Have to do that. Because all they're asking for is $25 billion for all three automakers. Is that not right?
An infusion of cash of that much. Not
right. But, I mean, if the union's got that much cash sitting there, and they believe in the product, and they believe in their workers, it seems like to me it'd be a win-win for everyone. And I wish that would get a little bit more play because I would not have even thought about it. Because, I mean, to me it seems like it would be a good use of union money.
I hadn't thought about it. It seems reasonable to me.
It seems like an excellent deal. and then let them negotiate their own agreement because they're negotiating with themselves. Okay, what do we want to do? And, you know, because they could appoint their own CEO or their own board, and then their new CEO, and they rock and roll, and hopefully it'd be a win-win.
It'd make for a negotiation of contracts deal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we can sit here, and I know me and you don't agree on a lot on the political things. I'll support our president, and where we don't disagree, fight like a dog, just like I always have. It doesn't mean that we give up, but, I hope Barack does a good job, and I hope that, I hope we can accomplish a lot and straighten some of this mess out. You're not going to get any on AIG and all that stuff. None at all. But at the same time, I don't think we should be bailing out the auto workers either. We shouldn't have bailed the other side. They are socializing all the losses. There's no question about it, and I don't like it, not one bit. They should let those companies that did that, supposedly they're smarter than we are. That's why they're doing it, I guess. But,
well, supposedly. That's why they got their bags, bags full of money, and we don't. I guess the proof in the pudding, as a lot of people like to say. I've got to dig into this about the unions and their money and that preposition you put forth there. That's interesting.
I'll listen to the podcast tonight and listen to what the story was in Texas, and maybe it'll give me another reason to prompt a call.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you.
All right, bye-bye, guys.
Interesting. I didn't know, and I should have known, I didn't know cash on hand. Do they? 35 bill? It's a lot. We played this piece about Dick Cheney being indicted, him and, our former attorney general, and Texans both. Well, Cheney, not a Texan, really, is he's from Wyoming. I think he's got a residence, just he's lived in Texas. Who knows where Cheney really lives. But since we're talking about a vice president that had to, that may have, I wish he would have resigned a long time ago, you all demand. I've been doing a lot lately listening to speeches by famous people. And this is one that I found very interesting, and maybe you haven't heard for a long time, but speaking of corrupt politicians.
Good evening. This is the 37th time I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shaped the history of this nation. Each time I have done so to discuss with you some matter that I believe affected the national interest. In all the decisions I have made in my public life, I have always tried to do what was best for the nation. Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. 2 days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress continuing that effort. As of such a base, I felt strongly that it was necessary to see its conclusion. That to do otherwise, faithful to the spirit of that deliberately difficult process, a destabilizing precedent for the future. But with the disappearance of that base, I now believe the purpose has been served, and there is no need for the process to be prolonged. I would have preferred to carry through to the finish, whatever the personal agony it would have involved. And my family unanimously urged me to do so. But the interests of the nation must always come before any personal considerations. From the discussions I have had with congressional and other leaders, I have concluded that because of the Watergate matter, I might not have the support of the Congress that I would consider necessary to back the very difficult decisions and carry out the duties of this office in the way the interests of the nation will require. I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is an instinct in my body. But as president, the interests of America first. America needs a full-time president. And particularly at this time with problems we've brought, to continue to fight personal vindication with almost total of the time and attention of both the President and the Congress, when our entire focus should be on the great peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. I shall resign the presidency effective at noon. President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office. As I recall the high hopes for America with which we began this second term, I feel a great sadness that I'm working on your behalf to achieve those hopes in the next 2.5 years. But in turning over direction of the government to the vice, as I told the nation when I nominated him for that office 10 months ago, that the leadership of America will be. In passing this office to the vice president, I also do so with a profound sense of the weight of responsibility that will fall on his shoulders tomorrow. And therefore, the patience, the cooperation he will need from all Americans. As he assumes that, he will deserve the help and the support of all of us. As the first essential is to begin healing the wounds of this nation, to put the bitterness and divisions of the recent past behind us, to rediscover those shared ideals, unity as a great and as by taking this action, I will have hastened the start of that process of healing which is so desperately needed in America. I regret deeply any injuries that may have been done in the course of the events that led to this decision. I would say only that if some of them and some were wrong, they were made in what I believed at the time to be the best interest of the nation. To those who have stood with me during these past difficult months, to my family, my friends, to many others who joined in supporting my cause because they believed it was right, I will be eternally grateful for your support. And to those who have not felt able to give me your support, let me say, I leave with no for those who have opposed me. Because I've been concerned with the good of the country, however our judgment differ. So let us all now join together, affirming that common commitment in our new president succeed for the benefit of all Americans. I shall leave this office credit not completing my term, but with gratitude for the privilege of serving President for the past 5.5 years. The nation and the world. They have been a time of very proud achievements that represent the shared efforts of the administration, the Congress, and the people. But the challenges ahead are equally great, and they too will require the support and the efforts of the Congress and the people, working in cooperation with the new administration. We have ended America's longest war, but in the work of securing a lasting peace in the world, the goals ahead are even more far-reaching and more difficult. We must complete a structure of peace so that it will be said of this generation, our generation of Americans, by the people of all nations, not only that we ended one war, but that we prevented future wars. We have unlocked the doors that for a quarter of a century stood between the United States and the People's Republic of China. We must now ensure that the one quarter of the world's people, Republic of China, will be not our enemies, but our friend. In the Middle East, 100 million people, many of whom have considered us their enemy for nearly as their friends. We must continue friendship so that peace can settle the Middle East. and so that the cradle of civilization will not become its grave. Together with the Soviet Union, we have made the crucial breakthrough that have begun the process of limiting nuclear arms. But we must set as our goal not just limiting, reducing, and finally destroying these terrible weapons so that they cannot destroy civilization and the world and the people.
Some people step on the door. If there's a chance of it opening up, they hear a voice in the hall and hope that it just passes by. People live with the fear of a touch, fear of having been a fool. They will not listen to anyone, so nobody's them alive. But I'm not above making up for the love
you've been denying, you've been moved.
I'm not above doing anything to restore your faith if I can. Some people see through the eyes of the old before they ever get a look at the young. I'm only willing to hear you cry because I'm an innocent man. I'm an innocent man. Oh, yes, I'm an innocent. Some people say they will stay here in the dark because they only remember too well they knew them before. People sleep all alone every night
instead of taking a lover to bed.
Some people find it's easier to hate than to wait anymore.
Ah, yes, I am an innocent man. That's what Tricky Dick was saying back then, you know. They fess up and say, hey, I got a really bad things. Bad things. You know, it's too bad. Politicians and their tenure in office. There's a guy right there who, politically, effective. Never a likable character, anybody that ever really liked. I've never heard, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that they liked him personally. He was very effective, and he eased on. But the overwhelming inside of that administration did him in, ultimately. I think it was inevitable that it would, once the truth came out. I've said, and I continue to believe, after all these years, that if Dick Nixon would have come before the American public right after Watergate broke and said, hey, look, politics is a dirty game, and we were pulling some dirty stuff here, and we got caught. And, guys like G. Gordon Liddy would have taken the rap for him and all that. I think he could have gotten out of the whole mess. I really do. I've always believed that. If he'd have come out and just squared up with the American public, got it over and done with, I think he could have withstood it. Maybe I'm wrong, but it would have been. I do. 866-546-5254, 866-546-50 program today. We heard rumblings yesterday. I did anyway. I don't know. I'm sure many of you heard it that I was going to hold off on resigning because the new governor would be in and he could appoint who he wanted to. Anyway, the talk was that Joe Biden's son, Bo, that he wanted to get appointed and then he could run for the seat in 2010 special election. I have heard this afternoon at all that Bo Biden said he is not interested in doing it. I haven't seen a quote from Bo Biden, who, by the way, one of my favorite speakers at the Democratic Convention in Denver. My, what a magnificent and inspirational talk he gave that night. And you could feel the love he felt for his father. Bo Biden, a wonderful appearance at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. It's a moment when I came home from there, I said one of the three best moments was when he spoke. It sounds as if, and I have not heard a direct quote from Bo Biden, but it sounds as if maybe that story is just a conjecture on somebody meet to it. I said I was going to get all his with you this second hour of the program today, and we heard a real dim Tricky Dick Nixon. And let's hear something uplifting, something maybe a lot of you haven't heard in a good many years. I consider it the greatest speech I ever heard, and I know some of you.
Vice President Johnson, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chief Justice, Vice President Nixon, President Truman, Reverend clergy, fellow citizens. We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, as well as a beginning, signifying renewal, as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed 3¾ ago. The world is very different. For man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human power, all forms of human life. And name revolutionary beliefs for which are still at issue around the globe. Belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity but from the hand of God. We dare forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, oppose any foe toward the survival and the success of liberty. This much, Mitch, and more. To those old allies and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United there in a host of cooperative ventures. For we dare not meet a powerful challenge at odds and split asunder. States whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonialism shall not have passed away merely to be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall be supporting our view. But we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom. For that, in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside. To those people in the huts and villages of half the globe, of mass misery, we pledge our best efforts to help them help themselves. For whatever period it is, not because the communists may be doing it, not because we seek their votes, but because it is right. Ready? Cannot help the many who are poor. It cannot save the few who are rich. To our south of our border, we offer a to convert our good words into good deeds. New alliance for progress to assist free men and free governments in casting. But this peaceful revolution of hope cannot become the prey of hostile powers. Neighbors know that we shall join with them to oppose aggression or subversion anywhere, and let every other power know that this hemisphere intends to remain the master of its own house. To that world assembly of sovereign states, the United Nations, our last best hope, in an age where the instruments have far outpaced the instruments of peace, we renew our pledge of support. To prevent merely a forum for invective, strengthen its shield of the new and the weak, and to enlarge in which its writ may run. Finally, who would make themselves our adversary? We offer not a pledge, but a request. Begin anew the quest for peace. For the dark powers of destruction, unleashed, engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. We dare not tempt, for only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt, can we be certain beyond doubt. But neither can two great and powerful groups of nations take comfort from our present cold sides overburdened by the cost of modern weapons, both rightly alarmed by the steady spread of the deadly atom, yet both racing to alter that uncertain balance of terror that stays the hand of mankind's final war. So let us begin anew. That civility is not a sign of weakness, and sincerity is always subject to proof. Create out of fear, but let us never fear. Let both sides explore what, instead of belaboring those problems which do. Let both sides, for the first time, precise proposals for the inspection of arms and bring the absolute power to the under the absolute control of all nations. Seek to invoke the wonders of science instead of its terrors. Together, let us explore, conquer the desert, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depth, and encourage the arts and commerce. Both sides unite to heed in all corners of the earth the command of Isaiah to undo the heavy and let the oppressed go free. And if a beachhead of cooperation may push back the jungle of suspicion, let both sides join in creating not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just, pure, and the peace preserved. In the first 100 days. Or will it be finished in the first 1,000 days? This administration. Nor even perhaps on this planet. But let us begin. In your hands, my fellow citizens, will rest the final success or failure of our cause. Since this country was founded, each generation of Americans has been summoned to give testimony to its national loyalty. Americans who answered the call to service around the globe. Now the trumpet, not as a call to bear arms, though arms we need, not as a call to battle, but a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. Forge against these enemies a grand and global alliance, north and south, east and west, that can assure a more fruitful life for all men. Will you join in that historic effort? In the long history of the world, a few generations have been granted the role in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. My fellow America, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man. Finally, whether you are citizens of America or ask of us here the same high standard of strength and sacrifice which we ask of you. With a good conscience, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.
The unforgettable, immortal words of John Inauguration Day, so many years ago. A day that so many were proud, so elated that this man was elected president. So full of hope and vision for he brought, so ready for day in America. Ended in not so long after that. The speech, in my opinion, is the greatest speech I've ever heard. Get a transcript of it, and I would urge you to do this. You can very many places on the net. Go over that speech line by line by line. And you're going to find that it was put together in such a meaningful way. There was strength, great strength of a nation, a warning, if you will, a peaceful warning to other countries, don't tread on me. Made it clear to our enemies that we would pay any price, bear any burden. Made it very clear to our nemesis. And yet there was compassion. And there was statesmanship in that speech as well. On the one hand, don't mess with us. We've got a powerful military. We will take care against any of you who try and cause trouble for us. And on the other hand, we'll talk to you. We will talk to you. Diplomacy is there. And we'll use it. Talked about freedom. He talked about peace. He talked in such a wonderful way in that speech. Again, speech that has ever been made on America. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I've never heard anything better. I do look forward to January the 20th of this year. Again, hear another great speech from somebody that I think, and I hope not all of you get caught up, and I find myself already one or two of the appointments that Obama's talked about, and boy, I don't know. I don't pretend to be as intelligent as Barack Obama, the benefit of the doubt on everything. I guess we all like to moan and complain, and we've done our share of it, and rightly so, but now's the time maybe just to put all that aside and say, hey, we're going to give this man a chance. We're going to give all of his appointments a chance until they... I've heard from so many corners people saying, well, you know, he's bringing some Clinton people in. If they're winners, bring them in. It's not necessarily the people involved change. It's the ideas that Barack Obama puts forth and puts to these people, whether they've worked in a past administration, make a lot of difference. They will be there to work with him and do his bidding and advance his arca. To be sure, they'll be getting their 2 cents worth in as well. Anybody that gets appointed by Barack Obama dance to prove whether they're up to the job and to prove really means it with change. And us, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on every single one of his decisions and hope that it works out. Hope that it works out very, very well. And I will. And Powerpuff just put on the chat room, Tom Daschle, Human Services, you bet. You bet. And for the job, I've always liked Tom Daschle. I think he will do a great job. He's a man of tremendous ethics. I think he's the right man for the job. And so far, you know, we're talking about some powerful people that he's appointing to these jobs. So let's wait and see if a few months into this new administration we see it's the same old, then we'll raise our voices loud and long, and rightly so. Doesn't make any difference that Barack is a Democrat, that he's a liberal Democrat, a progressive Democrat. It doesn't make any difference. We need to give him a chance. Wiggins, I did. I know most of you did. I wasn't happy that he won the presidency, just as the Republicans aren't happy that Barack Obama won it. And we wanted to see what he could do, and it didn't take him long to prove that he... But those are days gone by. We can only hope for something better. I wonder how many of you, like me, have a huge reserve of books at home. I do. As you know, we have a lot of authors. I haven't done so much lately because of the election. We have a lot of authors on the program, and the publishers send out a lot of books, and got a huge library of books here. And you get too many. And so I'm going through my bookcases and anything that has the word Bush on it, I'm getting ready. I don't want to forget the Bush administration. I'll never forget the Bush administration, but now it's old news in most respects. Yes, justice. But the Bush days are over. And so I'm looking at one here, Bush Must Go, How Bush, Al Franken books, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, and many, many books that's got Bush's name plastered all over it, and I'm going to get rid of every single one of them because it is old news, and we're looking for a new day now. We're looking for a new administration, and Bush can just go fly a kite, go back to Texas. Him and Sarah Palin, I would never hear from again. I do see where she's under some investigation in Alaska for using her office for political purpose. Somebody's suing.